Hey, what is up? Hey, welcome back to Depressed and Shit, where we believe that conversations on mental health don't have to look or sound any one specific way. I'm your host, Leah Matta. I am not a therapist, and this is not therapy. Regardless, it might make you feel some shit, and I most definitely think this week's episode is going to make you feel something, so buckle the fuck in. We're hearing a story about addiction, an illness that carries a ton of stigma with it, right? An illness that I pretend to understand, but I do not understand. But I feel like, can we all get on the same page and agree with the fact that it is not a choice? One does not sign up for a substance abuse disorder in the same way that one does not sign up for a physical ailment. That would be wild. And it also describes a whole range of experiences. I know for me as a bartender, and this is really under-discussed in the bartender world, I think, I've had real ups and downs with substances, specifically hard liquor, and I severely shy away from really confronting my habits or even being honest about them and how they're affecting my life and my loved ones. So today's depressed guest, his name is Eric Noches. He's the owner of Action Clutch, an East Los Angeles-based manufacturer of clutches and flywheels. I apologize, I do not know what that means, but I respect it. I know that it has to do with cars, beautiful cars, cars I cannot afford. But anyways, Eric shares his story with substances, drugs, and alcohol, which came into his life pretty early, but not in the way that you think. He lays it all out right from the get-go in a way that I did not expect. And so he's got a real journey in all senses of the word for you to listen to. One that includes periods of depression, isolation, but eventually lightness and self-discovery and joy. This word we've been hearing a lot about recently, joy. Next week, we hear from a man on his explorations into sound healing. I didn't know a damn thing about that, and it is hella interesting. Hey, if you dig this series and you want to support the show's growth, please open your Apple Podcasts app, scroll down, and hit those 5 purple stars and or the subscribe button. Help us get the word out on mental health awareness and continue to feature the stories that don't typically get the limelight. But for now, let's do it. Here's Eric Noches. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Welcome to Depressed and Shit.
Yes, I'm depressed and shit. I was actually.
So we have some deep shit to talk about. Self-medicating with substances, addiction, all that stuff. But I thought we'd start by learning about you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. Can you tell us a little about yourself in that sense?
Honestly, the first time I started like selling stuff was in high school. It was when I was about 14 years old. I started selling my mom's Vicodin. So we went to high school and I mean, people were doing obviously drugs. And like, this is when like the whole ecstasy stuff was like popular and whatnot. I remember buying pills and I'm like, wait, what is this? This is not ecstasy. Like, you know, prescribed drugs and stuff. And they're like, yeah, people are buying it and stuff like that. So I started going through my mom's drawer and then I found that she had like little things of Vicodin. So I started bringing it to school. I started selling it and I was making a lot of money. So
as a 14-year-old, yeah, shit.
14-year-old, yeah. I was making like about 40, 50 bucks a day just selling the Vicodin. And I remember going into a class and, oh man, the door opened. There's I think the dean and then 2 cops behind him. I had my Vicodin in like little Tic Tac, like a little Tic Tac container.
Yeah, I remember.
I remember just like getting it out of my pocket, opening the drawer on the desk, putting it there and closing it.
Wow, you knew from a young age what was up.
And then they literally just turned and came straight to me. So like they booked me in, I went to jail, all that stuff. So that was kind of like the starting point of, I guess, my entrepreneurship.
Your understanding of business. Yeah, that was, I understand that you work in cars now, which is dope, but that was definitely not where I would have guessed your story started.
Yeah, but it gets better because
okay.
I was homeschooled and, you know, I got kicked out of that high school and then I started.
Oh, like, I see.
Yeah, with the clean slate at Torres High School. So I started, you know, I started slanging again, but I started slanging UGG boots for women.
What do you think made you want to sell all this just for the fact of making money?
Yeah. Like I look back at it and I'm like, man, I just wanted to make money. Like I wanted to be rich.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Were you spending the money you were earning?
Yeah, I was spending it on stuff I liked.
Got it.
Yeah, like clothes, shoes, yeah. Parties. I mean, we would go to flyer parties back then and just spend it on Nas and booze and shit.
For sure.
So, yeah, I mean, what else, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't work.
I was like, bumming around Koreatown at 16 with like 20 bucks. But
awesome. Yeah, like, you know, like you can't work at that age. So
Right, exactly.
I went back. We started selling gummy worms with chamoy and tahin. So we were making a killing off of that. We were making like $75 every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever, high school, continue going. I graduated, I played sports. I went to college for like 3 months. And that whole summer, I spent it with my dad. And my dad was like this immigrant from El Salvador who came and was all he knew was just work.
Your folks are not together anymore, right?
No, my parents got a divorce when I was in eighth grade. So I was like 12, 13. Which, you know, that's going to get into like the whole why substance abuse, why mm-hmm. alcohol and shit like that. So,
all right, we'll save it.
Yeah. And I grew his business like within that summer. I tell my dad, I'm like, hey, can I create an Instagram, Facebook, Yelp? I mean, fuck, we blew up.
Damn. Yeah, it's up. So like, wild what social media can do, I swear.
Yeah. So I dropped out of college and I'm like, well, I got a business. I'm set. And that slapped me in the face like 6 months after, because I was sitting down thinking like, oh, what should I do now? Like how,
you know,
like, I was just desperate for like wanting to grow the business. Cause at that age, I was a kid with a lot of ego and pride and wanting to prove to others and wanting to show ones next to me like, hey, you know, I got you. I'll take care of you. I got money, blah, 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 blah. That really fucked me up in the mind, because then I felt like I was working just to prove to other people.
I'd love to hear about your relationship. I'm sure it's changed over the years with substances, right? I guess you kind of hinted on when substances first came into your life when you were 14. Were yeah. you taking them as well at that time?
Yeah, I was actually taking a lot of ecstasy
mm-hmm.
and I was taking a lot of pills too, like the Vicodin and the codeine and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. What about liquor?
Liquor as well.
Yeah.
The MDs, the Four Locos.
Oh, I mean, fuck the Four Loco years.
Yeah. Those were probably, I mean, you know, the kids have it not that bad nowadays with whatever the twisted teas they're doing.
Yeah. It's all been like mediated by the government.
Yeah. Me looking back now, I was a kid full of just pain. I was lost, confused, because that was also. That's when my parents had just recently been divorced.
Right.
My mom, she gave me the love that she thought was what I needed. Same with my dad. But like I said, looking back now, it was like, well, that's not what I needed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I needed more affection at the time. Maybe I needed more understanding as to why you guys divorced. Everything was ugly the way the divorce happened. You know, I mm-hmm. saw my mom super hurt. I saw her like, you know, wanting to take her life away. And seeing that as a child is kind of like, wait, but why does my mom like want to like die? Or like, why does my mom want to like leave? And you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm. it sounds like you feel getting into drinking and stuff was sort of a direct result of your folks' divorce and your family changing.
I feel like getting into all that was just a way of me suppressing my feelings,
mm-hmm,
emotions, mm-hmm. Wanting to stop feeling what I was feeling at the time.
Were you drinking alone or with friends or both?
It was with friends, because I feel like I connected with other hurting human beings.
Ditto. I can relate to that, truly. I feel like I've always been attracted to hanging out with other alcoholics.
Yeah, it was like, hey, yo, you fucked up too? All right, let's get fucked up together.
Is there any major point or period when you began to realize that substances weren't helping you? Like, when was there sort of a shift in the way you viewed it all? Was it recent? Was it a long time ago?
When I started working with my father,
mm-hmm.
I was 18. I was single for a bit, and then I got into a relationship. That was like my healthiest time of my life, because mm-hmm. I was working out. I was in a relationship.
You were like stable.
Yeah, I was stable, exactly.
Whatever that fucking means, but yeah.
Yeah. I was working, you know, making my little money, suicide, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. After that, I was 20 years old. I got out of the relationship. And that's kind of where like everything started to go downhill. So I feel like at that moment, I had never been single, like out of high school. So I was single and I had money and I had my quote unquote friends. They were just like me. They're, hey, let's go party. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. So that, sure. that was like, quote unquote, my college days. I was having fun. Looking back at it, I feel like that's when I knew like, hey, dude, you're getting into some shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're getting, you have like a whole history of drugs and alcohol. I feel like I was using work as an excuse to ignore all the hurt I still have.
Yeah, for sure.
All the open wounds I still have. So mm-hmm. I feel like at the time work was my drug.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like masking everything.
We've stayed busy to keep our mind off of this shit we don't feel like thinking about, right? The uncomfortable shit.
Yep. So in 2017, I got with the last, you know, I had my last relationship and I had continued, you know, to party and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was just drinking every weekend. I was doing drugs. It just became the same thing I was doing years ago. I realized that I had a problem. I realized I had a problem when I stood up 3 days, you know, back to back, just out with people doing coke.
For sure.
For 3 days straight and drinking for 3 days straight.
My mom, like you fully didn't return home.
Yeah. My mom found me in my room asleep. Like she says, like, I was like, she was so worried. Like she came in the room and she was like, what the fuck?
Mm.
Like, why do you sound like that? Like, why are you sleeping? Like, you know, what's wrong with you? I don't know what I sounded like. She woke me up and she's like, what's wrong with you? Like, and I just told her like, yeah, I did drugs.
Got it.
My aunt came, she slapped the shit out of me and she took me with her. And she made me wake up for a whole week at 6 a.m, go walk with her. I was coming down though, like.
Sure.
That whole week that I was with her, even like.
That's so interesting. So your aunt intervened and.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, at that point, my parents were just, my mom was just like, I don't know what to do with this boy.
Right.
She was just so heartbroken. She was hurt. And so she called my aunt because my aunt has a really strong personality. She kind of like was our second mom. I love you, Thea. She basically came in and got me out of it. And I felt like I went to rehab for a week.
Like you did go to rehab or your version of rehab.
Yeah.
At this point in your life, what do you think drinking and doing drugs was holding you back from or like doing negatively to you exactly?
It was affecting my mental health.
Yeah.
My relationships.
Can you talk a little bit about what it was doing to your mental health?
Yeah. So like when I say mental health, so I've been doing drugs and alcohol for so long that obviously I became depressed without knowing. All the money in the world, it was just like, well, why isn't this making me happy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, or I have a great woman by my side. Why isn't this making me happy?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like what the drugs and alcohol was doing, it wasn't allowing me to really see. If I would go outside and it was a sunny day, I would go outside and see a very dark, gloomy day.
No matter what you did. Yeah.
No matter what I did. Like we would take trips to Hawaii. We would take trips to and other places. I couldn't enjoy it. I wasn't happy. I didn't enjoy it. Like, yeah, hey, Hawaii, cool, awesome. But deep down inside, I knew I was bullshitting myself. I knew I was like depressed, you know, but it just, nothing around me was beautiful.
Did things start to change from there?
So my previous relationship, that was kind of like the real deal where like, okay, this is going to be the one I marry. It was amazing. She's an amazing person. But I was still doing drugs and alcohol.
Got it.
Our relationship. And you see, this is one thing I advise to people that when you do drugs and alcohol and you have like a significant other, the real person that you are becomes a beast. You're not you. Like your brain gets hijacked. Your girl is over here saying like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, this is not the person I know. Like, this is not the person who I fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what's the culprit of that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what's the cause of that? And the only thing you can do is look back and be like, oh, well, these are the drugs I'm doing. This is the alcohol I'm consuming. So we were having, you know, some problems with drugs and alcohol. So I had, so let me tell you about Eddie.
Okay. Yeah. This infamous Eddie.
Yeah. I had a dog sitter and she would take Rolex out to her chiropractor where she worked at. And they had a client named Idalia and she was a dog trainer. Idalia met Rolex and was like, wow, hey, this dog is really has a lot of like sexual pent up frustration. Like they need to neuter him.
Oh, interesting.
So I met up with her. She trained Rolex. I got him neutered. And then I remember telling her, I remember asking her, I'm like, hey, by the way, do you work with humans? Because at the time, like, I was just like, fuck, like, I want to change.
Right, right. You
know, like, I've gone so many years with just doing the same shit over and over again. So many years with going through women, through drugs, through alcohol, through just everything. Like, I'm like, that's when I was like desperately like just calling for help. Like, I was
right.
Now, like,
you did, you, but you reached out, you did something about it.
Yeah, I reached out to her, and I remember like her first reaction, she just laughed. She was like, I work with dogs,
fucking dogs. Yeah,
like, oh, yeah, exactly. You work with dogs, I'm a dog.
But there was something about her that felt, you know, like safe to you, or
yeah. I mean, because like I started, it wasn't like right away where I was like, hey, can you help me? It was just like, okay, like I started talking to, like, I started being more personal with her. She started like giving me like some advice too. Next thing you know, a week later, she's like, hey, by the way, like I met this really young guy that I want you to meet. I think he can be a good fit for you. His name's Eddie. Here's his number. So I got it and I was just like, all right, cool.
Oh.
I never hit him up though.
What?
At this point in time, I never hit him up. I resumed my party life.
Uh-huh.
Alcohol.
You're making it sound like this relationship you were talking about did come to a close, right? You're not with this person anymore.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I didn't hit up Eddie. I was just like, yeah, nah. Let me continue doing what I'm doing. Cause again, you have no control over drugs and alcohol at times. And when people say like it's all willpower, it really isn't. Because when you start to understand what addiction really is,
yeah,
it's not willpower.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people should really get educated on addiction as well if they don't know. Because when you tell someone, dude, all you have to do is just like not fucking drink, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
Like, don't say that. It's not that easy. You don't know what that person's going through. You don't know the shit that they're telling themselves in their mind.
It's reminding me, I recently, so you were talking before we started recording about going off on people on social media. I went off on this chick that I don't fucking know her, but this like health and wellness lady posted this video about laziness. Like, well, if you're lazy and you just sit on the couch, you're going to be fat. And I went off and I like, people aren't just sitting on the fucking couch because they're lazy. They're sitting on the fucking couch because they've got a lot of dark shit that they're dealing with. And it's not, so you can't just tell yourself to get up and exercise. It's usually a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, shit, it's way more than that, you know, because if it was like, just get up and work out, I think everybody would be doing it.
Right, right. We'd all be fucking health nuts.
Yeah, with abs and shit.
But we're not.
No, so whatever. So I continued doing, you know, the drugs and alcohol. I would stay sober for like a month. I would stay sober for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Like, oh, hey, awesome, you know. And I would just fall back into
there
it.
There was this temptation somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so it came to a point where I remember waking up on my bed. That night, I had just drank a lot. I remember waking up in my bed, looking up to the ceiling and saying, I'm tired. I don't want to live anymore. What would life be without me here? And those were just thoughts going through my mind. So I got out of bed. I went to go use the restroom. And as I was using the restroom, I texted Eddie. And I'm like, hey, this is Eric. I don't know if Idalia told you. I don't know. Can we meet? And he was like, yeah, sure. We can meet tomorrow. I usually meet with clients on Sunday. So I'm like, all right, cool. I met with Eddie and we spent like about 3-4 hours talking. Like, about.
Is he a therapist or like, what is he? Who is this guy?
I love it because everybody has the same reaction as you. Everybody's so curious to know who he is and no one knows. I've always had trouble explaining who Eddie is. He's a spiritual guide.
Cool.
The best way to explain it is he's just a mirror in front of you. So everything's in you, right? He just reflects it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You see, here's the thing when it comes to that kind of stuff. A lot of people are like, buy my book for $400 and I'll tell you how to become spiritual.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
and that's bullshit.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
Fucking greed, you know? So I started seeing Eddie. We started going over things and I would stay sober because obviously he's not going to tell me drink, you know, because he understood that like, hey, I have an addiction problem. And so when we started going over like the whole addiction stuff and why I'm doing this and what's causing this and I started understanding more about myself. I started understanding like, oh, okay, I'm drinking because I'm still fucking masking this whole divorce between my parents.
Got it.
Oh, doing drugs because after I finish drinking, I want more. And what's more? All right, well, let's do some coke. And that illusion that you get from drugs and alcohol, it's all fake. You know, it's just an illusion because you keep doing more to reach that next level of like, oh my God, this is feeling even better. Let me do more. And that's how people overdose. That's how people die. So, you know, I'm lucky enough to never have reached that point.
Yeah, you started to recognize that you weren't just drinking. It wasn't just an activity you were doing. It was directly linked to other things that were going on in your life and in your past.
Yeah, it was definitely linked to a lot of the social anxiety that I have as well.
Mm-hmm.
I hurt from heartbreaks of my previous relationships, my lack of self-esteem and confidence.
I really appreciate this story with Eddie too, and the way in which you sought help. It's been a pretty common theme on this podcast that people go to therapists for help, right? And that's totally valid and one option. But I think that we need to sort of expand our understanding of like what seeking mental health support is, especially because therapy has a history of being so dominated by Western white culture. And there's so many more options beyond that. So I think that's also what I'm really digging about your story, that you sought help in a way that was unique to you, but also seems to have really worked for you and helped you understand your own shit.
Oh yeah. I mean, you see, Eddie specifically says, I'm not a therapist.
For sure.
You know, and it's the truth. He's not, but I feel like he knows more information and more about it than an actual therapist.
What does it even mean to be like a licensed therapist or a licensed anything? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy because he told me my last session how the amount of hours of research that he's done in like metaphysics and quantum physics and psychology
just
every aspect is equivalent to going to the university 3 times.
Right, right. I believe it.
Hats off to you, man. Like, I'm glad, you know, I met him and stuff. So, you know, I would stay sober and just continue going back and forth. And it wasn't until a whole year after where, like, now I'm sober that I feel like, wow, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is it. I mean, I'm starting my sober life.
How has the pandemic made sobriety, like, better or worse? I would imagine the pandemic would really make sobriety difficult with all the added stress and shit that we've had to put up with this year. You know what I mean? And the loneliness and staying at home, right?
And a breakup.
Oh, right. You went through a breakup. Fuck.
A pandemic, a breakup.
Yeah. You've had a ton of stressors this year.
Yeah. It's crazy. And you would think like, hey, I would be indulging in drugs and alcohol right now. But I think part of like my whole breakup has been something that it's been a mutual agreement between her and I. It's like you're getting into a cocoon to become a butterfly, right? You can't take another, you know, caterpillar into that cocoon with you.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, wait, is it my journey or is it her journey? You have to go into this on your own. You have to go into this by yourself. You have to understand what it's like to feel finally.
But it's true. We hear this phrase a lot, but I think it's helpful to have constant reminders of it. You have to love yourself before you can love others.
Yeah. And like, you know, I was the one that was like, what is loving myself? I mean, I'm still in that process of like, what is loving myself?
Right, right.
But with seeing Eddie, I was doing like my laundry and I told him like, I don't know, something about me doing my laundry and folding the clothes, it just felt therapeutic. And he was like, well, yeah, that's part of you loving yourself. And I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Something so simple like that. And it's like, yeah, because you're spending time with yourself. You're kind of like in your own thoughts. You're having dialogue with yourself, with your inner self. So
I'm not sober, but I've really been having to steadfastly exercise moderation for myself, especially over the course of the pandemic. I don't think I'm alone in this. I was doing some like really heavy drinking in the spring back when the pandemic first set in. And for some reason, sobriety has never felt like the option for me, but moderation has been really helpful and healthy and good for me. But yeah, in order to maintain that, I've had to find other ways to sort of make myself feel good. And cooking has been a big one for me of recent. I've been like going nuts in the kitchen and it feels so good. And it makes me feel purposeful and happy. and social because I'll do it like with my roommate or my partner.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. You've been sober now for how long?
I'm going on 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah. I've decided to like just completely cut it off because I've tried the whole moderation stuff, but I'm just not there yet.
For sure. It's not for everyone. It's actually something that I learned of recently that in some of the bigger, you know, substance abuse support organizations are starting to offer moderation as like another option for self-help and self-development. And I was like, that's cool. Cause yeah. I think sobriety can sometimes sound really overwhelming for some people.
No,
I don't know. Maybe that's just me projecting my own shit.
It's all right. I mean, I agree. Cause I mean, hearing that I had to be sober mm-hmm. months ago was just like, fuck, but how am I going to talk to people? How am I going to go out and this and that, like the whole pandemic, I guess I'm just, you know, blessed to say that like it didn't really affect me mentally. The fact that like the actual pandemic didn't affect me mentally, it doesn't change the fact that I was still indulging in substances.
Sure. You know?
I feel like my personal stuff this year really got to me. And like, that's what I was facing, that like, fuck the pandemic right now, man. Let me like, I'm trying to like figure myself out. Sorry. Like, I'm just really like in my last fight against this. And it became something that was just bigger than the pandemic, to be honest.
Maybe your way of honoring the pandemic, you know, and supporting it in the way that you can is helping yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, now that I see it, yeah. Like if, like I look back at 2020 and I'm just like, wow, like 2020 has been a year of growth, mm-hmm. a year of heartaches, a year of like a lot of self-development for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like perspective as well. Like, look at the big things that we did. Look at the big things that I decided to do.
How's your mental health been over the last 3 months or so, you said, of your sobriety? Where are you at these days?
Oh, so my actual mental health and how I feel has mm-hmm. been insane. And so that's how I can actually validate that drugs and alcohol do fuck with your mental health. Because I've started exercising and I've lost about close to 15 pounds.
Nice.
I started changing my diet as well. I started eating you know, healthier meals. My relationship with certain individuals has also really, really gotten better.
Oh, good. Okay.
With my mother has gotten a whole lot better. Like, I'm so open with my mom now that like before I used to be scared to tell her how I feel mm-hmm. or before I used to be scared on telling her what I think, mm-hmm. but now I just fucking tell her. So like I said, you know, as you're growing up and stuff, your parents fuck you up, even though they don't mean to fuck you up.
Sure.
I think that has been like the biggest truth, and it's helped me understand that like, okay, my mom didn't know any better. My dad didn't know any better. They tried doing the best. Okay. Let me take that. Let me feel it out and forgive them. And it's a work in progress. It's not something that happens today in this conversation. We're like,
yeah, but it's amazing. You're like leading with empathy now.
Wow. I'm so happy you said that, because a couple months ago, I asked Eddie, I'm like, how can I be like empathetic? You know, like, mm-hmm. how do I have empathy? Like, and with work and inner self-reflection and stuff like that, I've developed that, and it's a work in progress always.
This is like an advertisement that it is possible to increase empathy. It's possible, yeah. Everyone. It's fucking possible.
Yes, you can do it.
So with all that being said, where would you like to see yourself in like 3 to 6 months from, let's say 6 months from now?
Creating amazing content. Like I have a really great media team right now. Mm-hmm. We've been fucking killing it with the content creation, and it's been fun. I've never laughed as much as I do now. And here's the thing, like I want to subliminally like include self-development, self-growth.
Yeah.
Things of that sort in the content.
I think you can do it.
Yes, man, we will.
Well, I think what's really cool and unique about you too is how much you're willing, how comfortable you are to talk about it. I think especially for straight men, right? There's a lot of stigmas against addressing this kind of stuff openly and honestly.
A lot of machismo.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, Latino culture for sure.
That definitely, I didn't even get into the ego and pride stuff. I mean, we can talk here for like hours.
I know, you had warned me.
Yeah. I mean, just know that the reason why I've been able to come out in front with my personal life and business now,
mm-hmm.
because I'm learning how to tame my ego. Ego will not let you fucking do shit. And I can promise you that.
I was going to see if you had any last words, but I guess you just dropped the mic. You just dropped the mic with that shit.
I'll end it with that for sure.
Depressed and Shit was recorded in a real live bedroom in Los Angeles, California. Music by Eric England, logo designed by Carrie Weiss, produced and hosted by Real Honest Biatch Liam Atta. Do you have reactions to today's episode? Do you have an experience with mental health you'd like to share? Or are you the baby angel from the heavens that wants to donate to cover administrative costs and all that fun shit? Email us at depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. No asterisk here, folks. That's just the logo. Shit is spelled S-H-I-T, baby! To repeat, depressedandshitpodcast@gmail.com. See you next Wednesday.